Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, this is Seth Payne.
And Sean Pendergast.
Did you know that Payne and Pendergast is both a radio show and a podcast?
Of course I did. Oh, you're asking everybody else. You can get every episode, every hour, every highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts whenever it works for you.
Welcome home.
It's an Academy Sports and Outdoors Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from Pop Stroke and Katy, here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
And for Ron Hughley and Clint Sterner, Sean Bajani and B. Scott, appreciate the engineering team out here. My guy, PC, Patrick Creighton out here as well, doing the dirty work, saying hello, giving handshakes, hugs, and kissing the babies and all that good stuff. That's actually from when he once played tennis that one time. No, it's he just makes weird noises like that. That was really him. Tyler Miller back at the station putting up with all the crap that is crazy for remote shows. Popstroke off Katy Freeway. It's beautiful. Great food, great scenery, great drinks, great people. Come out and see us. Our guy Reggie Atatula just walked in the building. So if you want to stop by, say hello to him, do that. We've got some YouTube listeners, fans out here. Guy Gene, Captain Fireball, who puts on one of the best, if not the best, Texans tailgates of all time. I don't want to know what it's going to look like this weekend. I would imagine there's going to be heavy drinking, which it's always the case, really. But
well, look, no.
If you
no,
feel like you need to be more numb going into the game this weekend than any other time before, I totally understand that.
Hey, but tailgating can't take a drop off. Win or lose, pass or fail, good or bad, heaven or hell, we're going to tailgate, right?
We're going to tailgate.
We're going to have a good time one way or another. Even if the Texans don't want to give us a good time or give us a product worth watching, we're going to still do our thing out there in the parking lot.
You know, these are conversations that we have to have just when times are tough in Houston, man. And times are kind of tough right now in Houston. Texans going through this early season slide. The Houston Astros are quite possibly right before our very eyes ending a historic, a city first, franchise first, dynastic run that they've had over the course of the last decade. And then, I mean, my God, you know, we'll get to the Rockets a little bit later, but it's just like, hey, Houston, come on, can't have very nice things for very long.
Come on now.
And that we have to have tough conversations. And the tough conversation that I feel like we have to have as a fan base, as a city right now, when it concerns our Houston Astros, is things that absolutely have got to be on the table for discussion, for action. There's got to be a call to action to change something significant this offseason, B. Scott, whenever that may begin. I know Ron Hughley was like, oh, here they come yesterday. You know, you score double-digit runs. Holy crap, here
man,
it goes.
Man, he was trolling.
I know he's trolling.
Ron ain't believe that.
Damn Kansas City Chief Royal fan.
Don't believe that.
But there are a lot of, you know, super fans that do believe, that are holding out hope, that do want to see that because, hey, you know what? How many times have we seen the Astros even lose World Series, B. Scott, to teams that weren't very great during the regular season but got hot enough at the right time and turned it on? Philadelphia Phillies, Washington Nationals, these things happen, right?
Yeah. And they beat the Phillies, but you're talking about the Braves. They lost to the Braves.
Yeah, but it wasn't an easy series against the Phillies, and you're right. Yeah, the Braves are the team that I was talking
about. But the point still stands, though. Yeah. We've seen teams, whether they lose or win against the Astros in the World Series, those were not teams that, let's say, in the middle of the season and certainly not at the beginning of the season, you were predicting to be in that spot.
But look, when the Astros made the decisions, and they were tough decisions, to trade Kyle Tucker, to allow Alex Bregman to sign elsewhere, to trade for Carlos Correa this season, to acquire guys like Jesus Sanchez, Ramon Urias, they created options for themselves. They created flexibility for themselves that otherwise wouldn't have been the case. They have $60 million or, you know, something in and around that neighborhood coming off the books this offseason. And so they're going to be able to do some shopping that we've wanted them to do for the last two off seasons, from a pitching standpoint, from a role player standpoint, guys off the bench, you know, maybe another outfielder, I don't know, somebody that has a consistent, you know, proven bat that's not like in their mid-30s. Not only those, but I have a list of candidates for movement and one that is all but guaranteed. And you can tip your cap to Framber Valdez yesterday, who I would imagine had to kind of, you know, downsize the fit after he pulled his, you know, hair out literally yesterday before the start and looked much closer to the vintage Framber that we've come to know and love. He's walking. Christian Walker. I think we need to talk about him. I think we need to talk about Yordan Alvarez. And those are the two. Those are the cream of the crop in terms of they may be victims of circumstance when it comes down to the flexibility you've created for your for yourself if you're the Houston Astros. Do you need to consider trading Christian Walker? Do you need to consider trading Yordan Alvarez in the offseason to continue to keep the window open, as Jim Crane has said and shown that he's willing to do responsibly slash irresponsibly in each of the last three off seasons for the Astros?
Yeah, so it's kind of two different conversations, and I'm curious where you are. Like, I think everything needs to be on the table to at least talk about. Like, if you had asked me this, let's just say two years ago, look, man, I would have thought it was insane for you to suggest might the Astros want to trade Yordan Alvarez. Even if you were to fast forward me to now and give me a little bit of context, oh, they're not quite as good, might you want to trade Yordan Alvarez? I would have thought it was insane. I still lean toward not doing that. Like, Yordan Alvarez at his best when he's right, when he's healthy, still one of the better hitters in baseball, certainly one of the better left-handed hitters in baseball. I think that there's value in that. There's value in his contract. I would rather keep him than get rid of him. Christian Walker's an interesting case because I don't even know what you'd get for Christian Walker. Like, yeah, obviously, if you can tell me you can get some kind of haul or whatever you consider to be a haul for Christian Walker, I'm all for it. I'm all for the conversation to begin with. But it doesn't really do a whole lot for me because I just can't imagine being another team watching him this year, and even with the context of what he did in Arizona, and feeling like, hey, yeah, you know what? I want to sign up for that. I want to sign up for that contract and make that my first baseman. So that one is a tougher sell for me. Yordan's the one that's got the true value, and you got to start talking about, like, at one point we thought this guy had a bargain contract, but that was only, like, with consideration to the idea that he would play for you. He does not play enough. And it's almost like every year you can chalk up an IL stint or something like odd and weird happened, or just like an injury of some sort. You can just like pencil it in that he's not going to be available to you for some significant stretch almost every season. And so that kind of colors the contract a little bit differently.
It does.
And then you start talking about where the team is. What does it benefit you to have such a great player and such an expensive player? And we talk about his contract being on a bargain, but he still makes upwards of $20, $25 million a year. What is the value of that if you're not even going to be a competitive team, or if you're going in the opposite direction of where you were headed when you signed that contract to begin with? It's not to say that you should for sure do it, but you should for sure
entertain
entertain it, and have the internal conversation to begin with.
Yordan Alvarez is a Houston Astro, at least in terms of his current contract, through the 2028 season. I'm not saying you need to trade the guy now. I'm not saying that by any stretch. But I cannot be blind to the fact that, look, the injuries have become a mounted issue. And if you can optimize the value that he is right now at the age of 28, just turned 28 3 months ago. He's going to be 29 going into next season, or at some point in next season, rather. I think it's something that needs to be discussed, because the Astros could very well enter into a what some would call a dark place, where the Houston Rockets were years back in the Daryl Morey slash Jeff Van Gundy era Rockets, where, you know, they weren't a great team, but they weren't a bad team. They were that mediocre team, and we had conversations every year where, you know, look, hey, should we just bite the bullet now and kind of, you know, just have a bad year, rebuild through the draft, save some money, build through free agency, Well, Jim Crane is very much shown to be that kind of an owner where you might have to make one drastic decision or the other, in that he's not been willing, unless it's involved Justin Verlander, to go over a luxury tax threshold. And God bless you guys. I love Justin Verlander, too. He feels like a stepbrother to me, but the Astros need to leave it at that. They need to leave it at that. He's very old, and he's much older than Kevin Durant. And I'm not ready to go searching for the gold that is never to be found underneath the end of one side or the other rainbow with Justin Verlander.
Yeah, well, I think what you're pointing out here is important, though, because you got to think about all the ways that you can build a team and what the Astros are most and less likely or least likely to do.
Yeah.
And as you've laid out and as we talked about, rarely is it do they spend that big, top tier big ticket item free agent. Will they spend on that big ticket item free agent? Very rarely are they signing those huge deals and acquiring that big. Obviously, they did the Christian Walker thing a couple of years ago. They brought in Josh Hader. That's another thing. Man, you signed a closer for a team that doesn't look like it's going to be super competitive. Like, what are going to be his closing opportunities? And that's not to mention his health issue.
Don't forget the gamble that really was, though, in an offseason 2 years ago, where when Jim Crane did that, and it was like, hey, we weren't sure if this window was going to be opened at that point in time. And when Jim Crane says 5 years, $90 million to Josh Hader, and it was like, whoa, well, we got Ryan Pressly. What's going on here? It's right. Like, oh, well, Press, he used to be a seventh and eighth inning guy up until the last 3 years at that time. So that's a role that, sure, he'll be fine sliding into. Well, from a personal standpoint, Ryan Pressly was thinking anything but that. And it was like, we saw how that turned out.
Yeah.
But
to be fair, Pressly wasn't good when he went to Chicago this year.
No, and he was. Well, he had a good stretch.
He had a stretch, but
he started poorly, and he had a really, really great Ryan Pressly stretch, one that we'd seen here time and time again, certainly in the postseason as well. But for whatever reason, there was maybe some health issues, maybe age just finally caught up to him, maybe – it was a perfect storm, and it was both of those things.
But ultimately, they signed a $95 million closer for a team that made the playoffs in the last day of the season.
Right, but my main point is that signal to the fan base that, hey, we're going to do what it takes to keep this championship window open. Sometimes they work. Sometimes they don't work. Sometimes you find yourself in a unique position where you make some bad decisions, and you can kind of forcibly keep that window open. I think the Astros are in that situation right now, and they have the opportunity to make some decisions that wouldn't be rallied upon by the fan base or the media or the like, but very much could be done for the betterment of the organization to do that, to elongate the optimal time, the window for players like a Jeremy Peña that still do exist for guys like Carlos Correa. I don't know how Yiner Diaz factors into that, but you have a budding star in Cam Smith. I do believe that. The guy can't look that good, that put together, that complete of a player for a month and a half to start a season and then be FUBAR. I don't believe that. Like, the guy's got the tools. But all that to say, the Astros have some major decisions that they could make this offseason, that they could make over the course of the next two offseasons, three max, as it relates to Yordan's contract, that are going to be completely unpopular and not supported, but they might be necessary to do what Jim Crane and whatever iteration of general manager Jeff Luhnow, James Click, or in this case now Dana Brown, have preached in: we are going to do whatever it takes to win.
Yeah, I think what's, even though we're having this conversation, I think what feels most likely or more likely is that they look at this season and all of the health issues that they had, all the injuries that they had, and just feel like it was an unhealthy season, an unlucky season, and something that can just be rectified with a regression to the mean and having better health luck. But I would caution them against that. I feel like that's what's going to happen. I fear that that's what's going to happen, but I would caution them against it.
Let me ask you, and we'll maybe talk about this individual coming up next, but just a yes or no, because we're up against it, and we can get into it on the other side. If the Astros were to make a unpopular, bold decision as it relates to the greatest player in its franchise's history, would that be a bad thing?
No.
All right, that's next. He's B. Scott, Sean Bajani, and for Ron Hughley, Clint Sterner. We're live at Popstroke and Katie. Come see us. Say hello. You can win prizes anywhere from a free oil change to swag from Academy to, guess what, Houston Texans football game tickets. We'll do all that between now and 6 o'clock. It's The Drive, Sports Radio 610. Stay put.
I'm always good raw dog in The Drive.
It's an Academy Sports and Outdoors Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from Pop Stroke and Katie, here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
It's not always sunshine and rainbows. There are some difficult things that we have to have conversations about, and we're doing that for you. It's like a service to the city, man. Sports Radio 610's The Drive. In for Ron Hughley, Clint Sterner, Sean Bajani, and B. Scott. T-Mill back at the studio taking care of us. Our guy Andy, on-site engineer, is an absolute bad ass hooking it up for us. Every single segment, looking out for us. If you are not out here at Popstroke, hopefully you're going to be on your way out here, and you'll get a free Area 45 Football Friday pint glass from us, on us. And hell, I'll pour the beer for you, man. I'll buy the beer for you. Come out, say hello, tell us we're not ass, and you'll get a free pint glass on Sean Bajani. How about that? 713-572-4610. If you'd like to be a part of the show, you can hit us up via text. And we'll continue to talk about all of the things that have enveloped Houston sports scene over the course of the last 3 weeks, if we're being honest. A lot of Texan conversation had and to be had. We'll get back to that. A lot more important things to get into in regards to the game and what ownership thinks about the 0-3 start. All that coming up. But in the meantime, B. Scott, this was kind of a thought by you in terms of, you know, having those discombobulated, uncomfortable, difficult kind of conversations and just simple acknowledgments. And in your case, you wanted to bring up and talk about here, acknowledging that maybe there are two guys on this Houston Astros squad that are not and will not be the same players they had once been before.
Are not, will not, and I think more specifically to why I brought it up to begin with, have not, right? And when you needed them to. I keep thinking back to about a week ago when I was on In the Loop with Reginald Atatula, who's out here with us at Pop Stroke right now, and I made the point that, and this is going into the Mariners series, right? So before they get swept by the Mariners at home in what felt like a gotta-have-it series, my thought was, hey, you really could use Jose Altuve and Carlos Correa. This is a time for them to play like the superstars that we have come to know and love them to be throughout this golden era of Astros baseball. And the fact of the matter is, they just have not been those guys. And look, I don't think that you're talented enough or deep enough, good enough, to be able to afford them not being special. And it has just stood out to me. And it's been disheartening because, you know, as an Astros fan, I got a special attachment to guys that are a part of any player or coach that's a part of a golden era. And we haven't, let's just be honest, we haven't had many of them. This is the best pro sports era that we've had ever. This Astros run that we're talking about. So Carlos Correa and Jose Altuve specifically are near and dear to the heart. They hold a special place in Houston sports history. And so to even talk about them or think about them along these lines or in these terms is a little uncomfortable and a little difficult and in some ways even kind of hurtful because you don't really want to talk about what amounts to Houston sports heroes in this way. But the fact of the matter is they have not been special. They have been remarkably unremarkable throughout the year. I put a stat out there last week about what they look like with runners in scoring position, with runners on third base, how the team is with runners on third base and less than two outs, like these critical high leverage at-bats and plate appearances where they just have not shown up when we've grown used to them showing up in these key moments. And so overall, we just want to talk about Jose Altuve specifically, and we were having a conversation about Yordan in the previous segment. Like, what do you do when you've got two guys that are this important to your operation, but they're a liability to you defensively, and there ain't but one DH spot? and two guys can't take it up at the same time.
Yeah.
And one of them got to play left field. But neither of them is an ideal choice in the field. Like, what do you do in this uncomfortable spot where you're having to force a guy into the lineup in the name of getting his bat? But in one case, with Yordan Alvarez, you can't rely on him to stay healthy. In the case of Jose Altuve, you just got to start being honest about what kind of player he is today in 2025.
The problem is specifically with that DH spot. PC and I were looking at this a couple of nights ago on our show, Area 45, in that the designated hitter position is a spot in which, look, Yordan Alvarez typically plays when he's not in left field, and he's really good no matter where he's at in the lineup.
Yeah.
But just using him as a first example, he's a little bit better in left field than at the DH spot. Yainer Diaz, a little bit better, in fact, a lot a bit better when he's catching than at first base or at the DH. Victor Caratini, a lot better when he's catching than at DH or at first base. You don't have multiple DHs, and the problem that you have from a conundrum standpoint, when you look at the statistics, there's only one DH, there's only one catching spot, and there's only so many places you can play Jose Altuve.
Yeah.
That you are optimizing his bat for the player that he is at this point in time in the year of our Lord 2025.
Yeah.
And there are too many players for so few spots at this point, but it kind of shouldn't have to come all down to those guys all the time, because only one of the two that I've mentioned is actually available for you, and that's Altuve. Yordan's FUBAR for the rest of the regular season, most definitely, and by some miraculous intervention, divine intervention, he's probably not going to be available to you unless you get to an ALCS or a World Series platform. There are a number of moves that this Astros ball club made to be able to shore up some of those things. And very interestingly enough, and dissimilarly for the Astros to what, to cross sport reference, what the Texans have been so good at in the last couple of years, where when they've needed guys to step, they've needed to go find guys, invent them out of thin air. They've been able to do that. If it's a DeAndre Houston Carson, if it's a Derek Barnett, whatever the case may be, they've been able to go find those guys, bring them in, and make immediate impacts. The Houston Astros, they've done that via the minor leagues this year. How many big starts did Colton Gordon have to make earlier this season? Brandon Walter, Jason Alexander. I could go on and on down the list. You know the names.
Oh, dude, they had a lineup out there where there were no less than four or five guys that did not start the season with the team.
They got
Jesus Sanchez out there. Urias is out there. They had Zach Cole out there. There was another guy. And Carlos Correa even falls along those lines because he's somebody that they traded for.
Sure.
So you look at it and you're like, man, they are making these adjustments on the fly.
They are. And look, some of them have worked in the short term and not long term. Some of them just flat out haven't worked at all. Now, I asked you a yes or no question before the end of last segment, and you'd said yes. And the question was, if the Astros did something that would be unpopular – or very bold, that would, be hinged upon the greatest player in the history of this franchise, would you do it? You said yes. It's a very general question, very blanket question. And to further preface my response to you, I'll read you a text message that we got during the break. It said, in regards to Jose Altuve from the 409, trading Altuve means a total rebuild. Loss of leadership, home run leader, willing to do what's necessary for the team, Shuttled up and down the lineup without complaining, no way. I'm not talking about trading Jose Altuve. I'm talking about doing whatever it is to preserve the legacy, the career of Jose Altuve, in him continuing to be what Dana Brown said needed to happen from literally his first few days on the job, and that is keep Jose Altuve an Astro for life. They've contractually done that. How can they, from a baseball standpoint only, on the field standpoint only, analytically data-driven standpoint only, continue to do that without hindering the success or lack thereof of this team going forward? You might have to trade Yordan Alvarez to do that. You might have to trade Christian Walker to do that. Jose Altuve is not a left fielder, i.e. like Craig Biggio was a stomachable center fielder slash left fielder at one point in time for the Astros. It's not the same.
Yeah.
It's a almost a generation gaps difference, and from a place in time where the organization is at a different place, you need Jose Altuve to be a designated hitter, because that is the one redeeming quality about his overall game. It ain't fielding at second. It ain't fielding in left. It certainly ain't base running. It is his bat.
Yeah.
And you've got to do, at whatever cost, I think, to preserve that going forward.
Yeah, because this is the conundrum, the one that I'm talking about, where you've got two guys who have really who are really one-dimensional players when you kind of get down to the nitty-gritty of it. And that is that conflict that I got at. Like, okay, and if you want to – if you don't agree with the point that we're making right now, just follow the timeline. Follow the Astros' actions up until this point. If it was weird to you that they moved him off of second base, like, why is Jose Altuve out there in left field? It's because they're trying to hide him. It's because he's a liability at second. And the best way, really the only way to hide a guy on the field is in left. And even then, you still need a guy to play a passable left field. It's not like the guy can be terrible. And so the thought was, the hope was, well, can he at least be passable out there? The metrics aren't good, no matter what you look at, whether it's left field, second base. He is not a viable defensive player for you at this stage in his career, even though he can still hit the cover off the baseball. And so what do you do when you've got a guy like that and Yordan Alvarez on the team? You've got to figure out something. Is there room for both of them? That is a tough question that they are going to have to answer, but certainly one worth us asking here on the radio.
Yep. It'd be one thing if he was Carlos Lee, who they hid in left field years ago, but he was also hitting 30 to 40 home runs every single season, driving in 100 runs every single season for the Astros. They had other problems besides him.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? 713-572-4610 if you'd like to be a part of the show. We're live out at Pop Stroke. In for Ron Hughley, Clint Sterner, Sean Bajani, and B. Scott T. Mill back at the studio. Pop Stroke, come see us. I've got three Academy gift cards, each valued at $25 a piece, left to give away. Also, coming up later in the final hour, final segment of our show, you got to be on site to win. We'll give away some football tickets. So make sure you don't miss out. Come say hi, enjoy the beer, the food, and the great weather with us here at Pop Stroke. Coming up next, the domino effect that Fred VanVleet's injury could have and likely will have on the Houston Rockets this upcoming season. We'll discuss next. Stay put.
They were playing that song about you swag and surf, and I looked around. I was like, this is pretty sweet.
It's an Academy Sports and Outdoors Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from Pop Stroke and Katy, here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
What in the world are you doing with your life if you are not here at Pop Stroke and Katy hanging out with us, Sean Bajani and Brandon Scott, a.k.a. B. Scott, a.k.a. B. Scott from Hiram Clark.
That's right.
In for Ron Hughley and Clint Sterner this glorious afternoon in the city and surrounding areas of Houston, Texas. Shout out to all the people that have come out. Did you hear the round of applause that we got? What in the world is going on? They must be drinking and have a good time. They're giving us a round of applause from Captain Fireball. To help me out with y'all's names. Who is it? I couldn't hear.
We got Shannon and
Janice
Steven.
And Steven?
No, Shannon.
Shannon and Steven.
So we didn't pull that off like the regular drive normally do. Let's do that again. We got Shannon and Steven. Shout out to y'all for being here.
Let's go.
Be like Shannon and Steven, the couple.
Let's go.
The beautiful couple here with us today. Be like them.
They came out. Reggie Atatula, he is not getting paid for this. He just loves and supports sports radio. You're not. I'm sorry.
You can't tell by how them shoes match that shirt, though.
I'm always good raw dog in the drive.
Reggie Atatula is raw dog in his afternoon, coming out here for free. In support of B. Scott, Sean Bajani, in for the drive. All right, so, you know, you come on frequently during Rocket season to talk about what the heck's going on with the Houston Rockets, and we're just a short time away from training camp and the preseason getting underway with the Houston Rockets and the NBA. So I figure, what better way to welcome in a little Rocket convo, and it's very important at this point in time, than get out to B. Scott and break down some Rocket basketball. So we have to do it appropriately. Tyler, we have that intro for B. Scott that's like chopped and screwed. If we can play that.
Let's go.
We're talking hoops, H-Town.
Not chopped and screwed, though.
Wait a minute.
Our guy B. Scott has all the latest from the hardwood in Clutch City.
Hey, this is not...
Hey, this is hilarious.
This is not chopped and screwed.
Hey. We don't do no chopped and screwed on the drive, bro.
Hey.
I wish we did. Hey. It's a shame.
Hey, look, I love this.
I'm so happy.
I love this. So, here's the thing. This is the gift and the curse of having two intros, right?
You got that one on in the loop.
Yeah, because...
You're on the drive, Johnny.
Because we're on the drive, and I can see T-Mill saying, hey... I ain't playing no in-the-loop intro
Why
for no drive appearance. And you know what, T-Mill? I respect it, dog.
Thank you.
I respect you playing that, and I ain't mad at it. So we're going to get into this thing anyway. You talked about...
Hold on.
I love in-the-loop, but this is 2-6, baby.
It's B. Scott.
Yeah.
Hiram Clark. B. Scott.
Hey, T-Mill say, not in this town, buddy.
Not up in here.
Hey, I'm not mad at you. But look, you asked a very important question or posed a very important thought of, like, the domino effect of the Fred VanVleet injury. Here's the thing that's important. You can start thinking about, okay, so what do the Rockets do now? Surely they're going to go out there and trade for a point guard, or in some form or fashion, they are going to acquire a legitimate starting point guard, considering that it seems more likely than not that they have lost their point guard for the entire season to a torn ACL. Well, it appears that they are not. From all of the scuttlebutt, from what I've heard and from what people that are just as plugged in or even more so plugged in than I am have heard, is that the Rockets don't really have plans. Now, this could change, but as of now, don't really have this, like, grand plan of replacing Fred VanVleet, going out and go getting a point guard, trading for a Peyton Pritchard or T.J. McConnell or folks with the Russell Westbrook dream. Forget about that.
I've seen a lot of names
like,
out there.
Like, it's just, just to be frank with you, it's more than likely not happening. And so it brings me, when we talk about the domino effect, the residual effect, it brings me to a very essential question. What is Reed Sheppard really? And that's not a question I feel like you really, like you could ask it all you want, but I don't feel like it was a question that you had to answer when Fred VanVleet was still in the mix.
Right.
When you bring in a Kevin Durant and you feel like, hey, that shooting problem that you used to have, and when you bring in a Dorian Finney-Smith and you talk about, hey, you know what? They don't have any snipers. They don't have guys that can knock down shots. You got to find Reed Sheppard. That wasn't the case then when they first made this team in the offseason. But now with this injury, they do not have, okay, they do not have a traditional point guard. And the person that is most similarly situated to Fred VanVleet and best situated to step into that role is their number 3 overall pick from a couple of years ago, Reed Sheppard. And I think we're going to get an opportunity to see him sink or swim.
It's a lot to ask of a guy that's entering into his second year, who is already coming in with a lot of pressure on his shoulders, you know, needing to, you know, have a more NBA type of body at that position, maybe get a little stronger, put some weight on, you know, shore up some things defensively, understanding, you know, movement and the switches, finding the best way to attack, you know, those ball handlers that he's going to have to be on, you know, in crucial points of games. And some of those things, like the last one, you're not going to really be able to see and understand until he's in those moments. But we know what this Rockets team has been like the last 2 years when Fred VanVleet's not been on the court. They were 11-11 without him on the court last season. Averaged still basically what they did with him on the court, about 114 points per game. But the season prior to that, which maybe is far more irrelevant than anything else, but the point still stands, this is a team from an offensive standpoint that struggles to have a rhythm and movement away from the ball and creating multiple opportunities to score when you have the ball. And now you're asking Reed Sheppard to kind of basically maybe him or Amen Thompson to be that kind of magic elixir, you know, without Fred VanVleet. I understand you got Kevin Durant. I understand he's still a top 10 player in the NBA right now and a dynamic scorer, one of, if not the most dynamic scorer during his era that we've seen. I get all that. But he's another year older, and he's not playing 82, I don't know that I would bet that he plays 72, B. Scott. You just don't know. And when you don't have that vital veteran presence that can knock down an outside shot and keep this, you know, wheel spinning for the Rockets offensively without Fred VanVleet, it is a question. I don't know that it's one that, like PC said, it's not one that maybe takes you from a top three team in the Western Conference to a bottom three team, which is where they basically were in the Western Conference last year in terms of, you know, just hoping to get into the playoffs, you know, kind of like coming in. But it does kind of call into question how serious of a contender is this team to win an NBA title.
Yeah, their title odds and title chances definitely take a tremendous hit with this. But if you need evidence, you don't need to take our word for it. You don't even need to take the three-game stretch in that Warriors series, the first-round series where they go seven games and lose it, but you're only in it because of Fred VanVleet. You don't even need that as the evidence. Point to no further than your own young all-star in Alperen Şengün, who has said a number of times since Fred VanVleet has joined the team, he's their brain. Like, he says that Fred VanVleet is essentially our brain out there on the floor. They at times are lost without him. I do think that that is going to be helped by having such an experienced guy like a Kevin Durant. Never mind the fact that he's one of the most prolific scorers of all time. But he does know what he's doing. Dorian Finney-Smith is another guy who's going to play a lot of minutes for them, has played a lot of minutes in the NBA already. We should be very familiar with him.
I'm going to nominate him already before a game is even played for probably the most underrated Rocket this season. I feel like that's just going to be the case because we don't talk about him enough.
Well, I mean, I was having a discussion before this Fred VanVleet injury about who would be their fifth starter because we were assuming that Fred VanVleet would be one of them. And I had landed on Dorian Finney-Smith perhaps beating out. Maybe beating out is not the proper term, but being the last man standing of that race between him and, let's say, the Jabaris and the Taris of the world. Like, him being that good enough, both defensively and guarding elite wing players and being a knockdown shooter, that he could fill that role. Now, I'm almost sure that him and obviously some combination of Jabari Smith or Tari Eason is going to be in this starting lineup because you don't have Fred VanVleet. Or is it going to – and so in that case – are we talking about Amen Thompson being the brain of the operation? Or are we talking about somehow relying on a second-year Reed Shepard who could barely get on the court as a rookie being a brain of the operation? Who is going to – we talk about the domino effect. The domino effect is, of course, I mentioned Reed Shepard, but who, in a nutshell, is going to be the brains of the operation when we go out there? Who's going to get everybody in their right spots in their sets when they run them? And they don't run enough of them to begin with, but when they do run them, who is going to be the one that, who's going to play the thinking game for the Rockets out there with no Fred VanVleet?
You know,
that is a question that is hard for me to answer as I sit here.
It's a question that the Rockets, unlike the Texans, have far more games to figure out answers to how well their offense can actually function. Like, they can afford to make some mistakes. They can afford to figure some things out.
Yeah.
They got 82 games. Sports is unfair, man. The Texans, you got 3 weeks, and then the sky starts falling.
Yeah.
It's just one of those wild things. But, yeah, I want to get back to this discussion a little bit later on. Coming up next, we're going to roll into the 4 o'clock hour. I want to talk about how desperate the Texans actually are to get a dub on Sunday against the Tennessee Titans. It hinges on far more than just what historical numbers tell you. We'll discuss next. Sean Bishani, B. Scott, in for Ron Hughley and Clint Sterner. It's The Drive, Sports Radio 610.
Rock and roll, meow.